Hi, everyone. I'm John C. Morley, the host of the J. Moore Tech Talk Show and Inspirations for Your Life. It is John C. Morley here, serial entrepreneur. Hopefully you caught my hat. My hat, in case you guys didn't see it, it actually says believemeachieve.com, but I'll give you guys a second to watch us cycling around there. Believemeachieve.com, and you can catch all my great information there. So definitely check that out, everyone. I think you guys will be really happy with all the great content. Do be sure to follow, like, and support. I do really do appreciate that. From the bottom of my heart, for those of you that are mourning over Good Friday, today is Good Friday, so my solemn wishes for everyone that is observing Good Friday today, that it is a peaceful one, a remorseful one, and one that we all can give gratitude for our Savior that has gone before us. So I do want to wish that to those of you that are celebrating Easter this weekend. And I want to thank you for being here with me, whether you're here when we're live or whether you're here later on or any other time during the day. Thank you so much for being here and watching the J. Moore Tech Talk Show. You know, we're on Series 3, ladies and gentlemen, in case you didn't know that. We're on Series 3, which means we're into our third year. And we're on show number 13E. That is pretty cool. So let's get right in, because I got lots of stuff to share with you tonight, right? First thing is this. What is Truth Social? Somebody know, what is Truth Social? Well, I'll give you a hint. This is something Donald Trump has put together, former President Donald Trump. Launched the social media platform Truth Social in the early 2022. After he was banned from major sites such as Facebook and other places like Twitter. And we all know what happened on January 16th on the attack on the U.S. Capitol. So what's interesting about Truth Social is, so Donald Trump, previous president, has said that he created this platform to allow people to speak freely and openly whenever they want. But before Truth Social, there was a short-lived blog on Trump's personal website called Donald J. Trump, but it didn't last long. And Trump's camp was already hinting that the former social media platform in the works, and Truth Social really got up and running in February 22. It was a little glitchy to start, but it's interesting to see what's going to happen and what's going to go on. And now Truth Social, if I remember correctly, Truth Social is, in case you guys didn't know this, yes, Truth Social is now basically available to the public, as I mentioned to you. Truth Social is also, guess where else it is? Yes, this is going to probably blow your mind, ladies and gentlemen. Truth Social, basically, they announced a merger that would take it public. Trump Media, the parent company to Donald Trump's social media platform, Truth Social, hit the market not too long ago, actually just a few days ago, under the ticker symbol DJT for Donald J. Trump. So let's take a look right now at DJT's ticker just to see, you know, what his ticker is doing right now. So ticker trading at, let's just see what it's doing at this moment. So the DJT stock trading symbol, let's see if we can get any information on DJT's stock. And let's see, is there anything on the DJT? Well, the stock is seeming to grow. But this thing, where is it going to go? And it's the social media platform and what they're doing. And now you can actually buy stock in the DJT. So interesting. You can sign up for a brokerage account on the public. You can add funds to your public account. Choose how much you like to invest in DJT. So I think it's going to be interesting. But is it really going to live up to the name of why, you know, Trump's Social is now a public company? So the stock surged about 56% at the open to $78. And trading was halted for some volatility reasons. And Trump Media share stabilized around $70 roughly. But the question is, it has some people on the sidelines saying, you know, should I invest? Should I not invest? It's going to be this kind of wait and see what's going to happen. And we'll have to see, you know, what's going to go on. Is it really going to be a true platform that is going to do what he says it's going to do? Or is it just some other, let's say, approach to just get some more people interested in him so that he can win the next upcoming presidential election? I don't know. So True Social had 494,000 monthly active U.S. users on iOS and Android combined in the past February, according to similar web stats provided to CNN. And that's a small fraction of the 75 million on X, formerly known as Twitter, 142 million. So it has a long way to go, but I mean, their claim is that they're going to allow you to speak and do whatever you want and that it's going to be allowed. We'll have to see what's going to go on. So be interested to see what goes on there. All right. In other news, the federal officials wanted to know about how airlines handle and share passenger information. This is a real cool one. So just out of the blue, a federal officer wanted to learn basically how airlines, let's say, store and maintain passenger data. Okay. And the government wanted to know what was going on. This happened just about a week or so ago. And so the federal officer wanted to know how airlines handle and share passengers' personal information. You know, do they get compensated? Do they make money off of their data? Is it kept under wraps or privacy? It'll be interesting to see what's going to go on, because the thing that's very interesting about this is there was a quote that was made by Secretary Pete Buttigieg, and the name, if I'm saying that correctly, and the quote was, airline passengers should have confidence that their personal information is not being shared improperly with third parties or mishandled by employees. So again, I think it's an interesting, I mean, it was probably just some type of somebody who was disgruntled about what happened with the agency or with the airlines, and they decided they wanted to check and hopefully they find some dirt. Luckily, they didn't find anything. And a lot of people had asked the airlines, have they received complaints about employees or contractors mishandling personal information? And Southwest said it discloses in its privacy policy that, quote, it shares certain customer information with select partners and third parties, but gives customers the ability to opt out of sharing. Delta, United, American, Alaska referred questions to airlines for America's statement. And Allegiant, which is not part of the trade group, said protecting customer data is a priority and it welcomes the government review. So I think, you know, the question that I have to say, or the deduction I make, is that I think they're making mistakes sometimes. I mean, they're not perfect. But something had to happen to make this federal set of officials want to learn more. And you might be saying, gee, John, you know, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is, you know, if this data is, let's say, shared in a way that it's not appropriate or against people's actions, well, that could have serious implications to their security. And I think everyone just has to understand what they do, what they aren't doing. And the other thing that's interesting is that the department said it sent letters to each of the airlines, Delta, United, American, Southwest, Alaska, JetBlue, Spirit, Frontier, Hawaiian, and Allegiant about their procedures for collecting and using passenger information, including monetization of passenger data, target advertising, and prevention of data breaches. And they claim that there were no issues and no complaints. Now, I have a hard time believing that there were no complaints. So, I don't know, maybe they just didn't want to say anything, but I think it's interesting that they at least decided to do something. I think that's a very interesting thing. And we're just going to have to keep an eye on it because, you know, we all know that whether it's an airline, whether it's a publicly traded company, they sometimes look at the pie that they're getting money and they'll, let's say, overlook a few rules. I mean, that's not nice to say, but I have to tell you, I believe they will when it comes to money, especially if no one's watching. So another interesting thing is the nationwide tech hiccup for driver's license. What happened with this? Yes, there was a nationwide tech hiccup for driver's licenses. What exactly happened? Well, this happened right around the 21st, and it was a nationwide problem where they were not able to issue U.S. driver's licenses across the country or be able to produce any titles for cars. And the technology problem was supposedly brief. It happened on that Thursday, and it caused a big problem. The outage took place from 9:50 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., and they claim, quote, unquote, it was due to a loss in cloud connectivity. And this was by the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. And it prevented a number of motor vehicle agencies from issuing driver's licenses as well as titles, as I said. And this was a big problem. But my question is, if you're going to be so reliant on technology to provide services, we need to have a backup. We need to have some way that the system can operate in the unlikelihood that the cloud goes down. You know, there might be some functions that they can't perform, but they should be able to do certain things. They should be able to reissue driver's licenses. That shouldn't be a big deal. Maybe there might be an issue with providing a brand new one from scratch, but renewing, I think they should be able to handle renewing. That's definitely an issue. So every state uses the system now to verify a driver's eligibility for a license and for other critical functions. And this was according to the Illinois Secretary of State. In the email of context that went back to them that, you know, this is something they're using, but it went down and they claimed that they were not able to verify any of the data, thus they could not proceed further. I don't know. I think that this is just poor planning on somebody's part and they really didn't do what they had to do. Well, kudos to Tennessee because Tennessee is the first state to protect musicians and other artists against AI fraud. Yes, so Tennessee is protecting musicians against AI fraud. So what does this really mean? So it's in an effort to provide music artists some protection from the AI-generated deep fakes of their voices. Tennessee recently enacted the Elvis Seeking a Cure problem. And Tennessee passed the Ensuring Likeliness Voice Image Security Elvis Act, which goes into effect, by the way, July 1st of this year, 2024. So Ensuring Likeliness and Voice Image Security Act, the Tennessee Governor Bill Lee signed into law the Ensuring Likeliness, Voice and Image Security Elvis Act of 2024, expanding the state's statutory right publicly to include an individual's voice and guarding against AI misuses. I think it's great they're doing this. I think we're going to see that a lot of other states are going to follow suit with this because we all know why Tennessee did it, because they're a big capital when it comes to making country music and other types of music, and they want to protect their musicians and their other artists. So, again, kudos off to Tennessee, and I hope many other states like New Jersey, Connecticut, Delaware, and others will follow suit, maybe in Las Vegas. I think we need to see what's going to happen. And when this happens, I think it's going to become a domino effect, very similar to the way Apple had the issue with the European Union, making all phones to now have the USB-C connectors on not only them, but other mobile devices, laptops, and other types of things that consumers use. Well, the French regulators fined Google $272 million in dispute with news publishers. So what happened? Yes, a $272 million dispute. And this was all with the French, Google and the French French government. And so the French regulators fined Google. This was on March 20th, by the way. They fined Google $272 million in dispute with news publishers. So this is very interesting because apparently they had struck some deals with the French and their media professionals. And unfortunately, Google had reneged on that offer. So the French competition authority said it issued the 250 million euro or 272 million penalty because of Google's failure to comply with some commitments it made in the negotiation framework. Now, they didn't specify exactly, but we all know that Google can be underhanded. We know that they've gotten in trouble. We know Facebook's gotten in trouble. And when it comes down to money, let's face it, these people are not your friends. They're here to get every dollar they can, even if it's going to harm another person. The U.S. tech giant was forced to negotiate with French publishers after a court in 2020 upheld an order saying payments were required by a 2019 European Union copyright directive. Google said in a blog post that it agreed to settle fine, which was imposed over how it conducted the negotiations, because it's time to move on. Well, I don't think it's time to move on. I think it's the fact that Google's going to lose more than their shirt and shorts. And I think companies like Google and other social media companies and other people that are operating online with different platforms, they need to understand that just because you're big doesn't mean that you are not responsible and accountable. All right. So we'll keep following these stories for you. But kudos to the French for socking it to Google, because I think more people need to sock it to Google. And they need to realize that they are not the world's leaders. They might have a technology, but so what? They still don't have the right to operate in an unfair, unprofessional, and biased way that's for the best good of themselves, with harming and hurting other people physically, mentally, emotionally, etc. So here's another interesting quinky-dink. Historic bridges are under threat by truck drivers relying on GPS. So what happened? Yes, there are many historic bridges that are under attack by truck drivers. So this is a real interesting thing, because see, a lot of these truck drivers, I mean, truck driving, let's just face it, they used to be a lot more professional, now they're not. I remember making a post earlier this week about this, and the guy got a little nasty with me and saying, well, you try to drive a truck. And I said, I don't want to try to drive a truck. I hire professionals to do things that I don't do. And just because, you know, somebody, you know, can't be accountable for their actions, that doesn't mean you should be putting the ball back in my court. So what the drivers are saying is that they are using GPS that's meant for cars. Unfortunately, it's getting them to crash right into these beautiful covered, whatever you want to call it, these beautiful covered bridges that are all over the country. And one of them was in Linden, Vermont. One of Vermont's historic covered bridges has been really seriously damaged. Box trucks are relying on the GPS that is designed for cars. Now, drivers can face a fine of up to $5,000 from the town, plus state penalties. And these bridges still keep getting whacked and nothing's being done. I mean, come on. A bridge that was built in 1878 and, you know, maybe renovated in 1995 and basically being demolished because we have truck drivers that don't know how to drive professionally. I don't think truck drivers are as good as they once were. That's not to say that they can't be, but I feel that a lot of these people are not using common sense. In 2019, a delivery truck hit the supports and the engineering repair costs were nearly $100,000 on one particular bridge. So it's a big issue. And I think that saying that you're following the GPS is not really a valid reason to say it's okay to hit a bridge. It's not okay to hit a bridge. It's not okay to crash into a bridge. I mean, if you're pulling into a parking lot, for example, and you're unsure if your vehicle is going to clear that garage, you're going to be pretty careful, right? You're going to say, oh, gee, my GPS said it must be okay. You've got to use some common sense, but I think common sense is not there anymore. And many truck drivers don't understand that they've got to be accountable. And the question you might be saying is, so why are truck drivers not as good as before? Well, they seem to be good as a group of drivers. But when they're all alone and they're driving their own truck, they're not driving like they used to be. Truck drivers are declining. Statistics show that the fleet driver turnover can be as much as 50 to 100% per year. And the average driver only stays with a company 12 to 24 months. And there are several reasons for this. It can be afforded that the U.S. Full load trucking industry has been in steady decline. Truck driving is a challenge because people don't understand that, you know, operating a truck on the road, it's not easy. But I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just saying if you're going to do it, you've got to be responsible. If you're going to be a plumber, well, you got to know how to plumb, right? If you're going to be an electrician, you need to know how to do that. If you're going to do engineering, you need to know how to be an engineer. If you're going to be a carpenter, you need to have how to carpentry, frame a house, frame a building, right? You need to know how to do these things. And I think a lot of people are getting lazy when it comes to things like this. And I can't believe that they just think they can just go under the bridge. I mean, they have no common sense. And they say, well, gee, the GPS just led me there. I mean, what were you doing, going 100 miles an hour? I mean, can you not see that the covered bridge is actually a lot lower than your vehicle? I mean, come on. The other thing might be is maybe you're actually not getting enough sleep. That could be the other problem, too, when you're driving too much. Now, here's an interesting one. A pair was accused of stealing battery manufacturing secrets from Tesla and starting their own company. This is really cool. Yes, a pair of people stole Tesla battery manufacturing secrets. This is crazy, ladies and gentlemen. And this was just deduced not too long ago. I mean, when we think about, you know, the fact that two men, they're accused of starting a business in China using battery manufacturing technology that was stolen from Tesla and trying to sell the proprietary information. And the thing about it is that the two people, one was Klaus Piflugbel, a 58 Canadian citizen who lives in Ningbo, China, was recently arrested on Long Island. And he thought he was going to meet with a businessman to negotiate a sale price for information. And the federal authorities said instead the businessmen were undercover federal agents. So there's another man named in the criminal complaint, Yilong Shao, a 47 also of Ningbo. He remains at large. They could not get him. And they are charged with conspiracy to transmit trade secrets, which carries up to 10 years in prison. Now, according to this and what their whole claim that makes it okay, which I don't think it is, they work for a company, a Canadian company, and then this company later on got bought by a U.S. company, they got bought by Tesla, and they already had known the secrets from them, but that didn't mean it was their right or that they had the ability legally to take these secrets. So that's a big problem. And here's a real interesting one, ladies and gentlemen. I think this is just unbelievably crazy. So there is a new, yes, there is a new law. In case you guys didn't know this, there is a new law in England. And it is called cyber flashing. Now, you might be saying, John, what the heck is cyber flashing? So cyber flashing is an act of sending non-consensual intimate images to another person. And this is a type of harassment. It occurs via services such as AirDrop, as well within the realms of other social media, dating apps, etc. And if you're sending these things and they are unwelcome, they are known as a cyber flash. So what are the cyber flash laws now in England? Well, Computer Misuse Act of 1990, the CMA 1990, is the main UK legislation relating to offenses or attacks against computer systems, such as hacking or denial of services. So a great big problem. So what was the first arrest in England for cyber flashing? Well, this one's going to probably blow you out of the water. His name is Nicholas Hawks. He's a 39-year-old person, and he became the first in England to be jailed for cyber flashing. In fact, cyber flashing became a criminal offense in England with the passage of the Online Safety Act of January 31st. 2024. So a big issue. The courts, as I mentioned to you, did go ahead and put him in jail. And the thing is, this was the first person in England to be convicted of a cyber flashing offense, and he had been jailed for 66 weeks. That's a little over a year. So he was convicted under the Online Safety Act after cyber flashing became an offense in England and Wales on January 31st. Now, the 39-year-old from Basildon was already a convicted sex offender when he sent unsolicited images of his private parts to a 15-year-old girl and a woman on February 9th. The Crown Prosecution Service had descended this. And the Southend Crown Court heard on recently that Hawks asked to use his father's phone to call probation. He went into another room when he sent the indecent photo via WhatsApp to a woman in her 60s. Minutes later, on the same device, he sent an explicit image to the child over iMessage, who was said to have been left overwhelmed and crying. Now, both victims took screenshots of the messages, and both people had reported them to the police the same day. In fact, the prosecutor said the offense is, quote unquote, fall as part of the established pattern of behavior of the defendant. And despite his previous offendings, Hawks has reported not receiving any treatment. Though he was offered 12 appointments with a psychiatrist, he never received them as the waiting list was too long, the court heard. And so Hawks admitted during an earlier hearing at the Southend Magistrates Court to two counts of sending photographs or films of privates to cause alarm, distress, or humiliation. So cyber flashing can involve offenders sending people unsolicited sexual images on social media, dating apps, or via Bluetooth or AirDrop, etc. And victims of offense and other image-based abuses receive lifelong anonymity under the Sexual Offenses Act. Now, Hawks was on the sex offender registry after being convicted last year of sexual activity with a child under 16 and exposure, for which he received a community order. Just recently, he pleaded guilty to breaching the order and breaching a suspended sentence for another offense. He was jailed for 66 weeks and handed a restraining order for the woman and the girl lasting 10 years and a sexual harm prevention order banning him from approaching women who he does not know on public highways and in parks for 15 years. So I think this is on the right step. They're doing the right things. But, you know, the whole thing is this is a problem. This is a serious problem. And I think we as citizens, whether it be parents, whether it be volunteers, whether it be business owners, doesn't matter. We have a responsibility to act in that manner. And if someone is acting in a sense that makes us feel uncomfortable, we have a right to tell them that that is inappropriate. If somebody goes as far as the cyber flashing, well, then you definitely should report that because the person probably does have some type of an issue. So again, cyber flashing is illegal in England and Wales. And the question people ask me, is cyber flashing illegal in the U.S.? And the answer to that is only two states, Texas and California, who now have cyber flashing laws. So the Texas law passed in 2019 classifies cyber flashing as a Class C misdemeanor with fines of $500, and the state passed the legislation with the support of Bumble, a popular online dating app. So the question is, you know, where do you draw the line? Is sending unsolicited pictures harassment in New York? A person is guilty of unsolicited disclosure of intimate images when with intent to harass, annoy, or alarm another person, he or she sends by electronic device an unsolicited intimate image to such other person. So we still have a long way to go when it comes to getting this to other states. But I think people are starting to realize that it's a problem. People ask me, is cyber flashing illegal in Maryland? Indecent exposure is punishable in Maryland by a $1,000 fine and up to 3 years in prison. But that's a person who's flashed in real life. Images like those on sites and social media apps don't seem to have any effect to causing any type of reprimand or any type of, let's call it, order to stop that. So, you know, there are other rules. Example, in New York, there is something called sexting, S-E-X-T-I-N-G. It's a crime in New York to use the internet or computer system to send a child younger than 17 any obscene material or engage in any sexually explicit communication with such a child. For example, a high school senior who sends a freshman a photo of his or her privates could be convicted under this law. So there is becoming a fine line between what's allowed and what's not. But I think it's very important that communication is open and that we're aware of what's going on. Because if we're not, well, I always said to you, if you don't communicate, you're going to get in trouble. So communicate. Somebody might not like what you're going to have to say, but at least communicate and be adult enough to respect what they're going to say and abide by it. All right, guys. We have a lot of stories tonight. The AI robot, which is pretty cool, is spotting six tulips. This is cool. Yes. So there's an AI robot that is spotting sick tulips. This is amazing. They have this device that basically moves less than a half a mile an hour. Because the thing is, you know, this would take people out of nights and, you know, cause them a lot of extra aggravation that they don't need to be part of. And so, you know, when we think about this, a robot that can spot six sick, S-I-C-K, tulips, and also to slow the spread of disease through Dutch bulb fields. This is amazing. But, you know, the thing is this, looking for these good tulips takes a lot of time and bad tulips. So the way it works is this device moves up and down the fields, again, very slowly, probably about a half a mile, an hour. And the dead bulbs are removed from the healthy ones in a sorting warehouse after they've been harvested. So it's able to identify. And the thing that's very interesting about this is part of the efforts to tackle the virus. There are 45 robots that patrol tulip fields across the Netherlands. As the weather warms up and farmers approach peak seasons, their bulb bloom into giant patchwork of colors that draws tourists from around the world. This is absolutely amazing. So how much does this robot cost? Well, in euros, it's 185,000 euros. In US dollars, it's just $200,000. A quote came from one of the people there, and quote, "But I prefer to have the robot because as a sports car, it doesn't take out the sick tulips from our field." Yeah, it's expensive, but there are less and less people who can really see the sick tulips. So here they're comparing to the fact of, should I get a sports car or should I get one of these devices? And he says he'd rather have the device because they'd rather have healthy tulips. So in just about 0.5 to 0.6 miles per hour, it hunts out the telltale red stripes that form on the leaves of infected flowers. And it is pretty cool how this works. And so we're starting to use AI in a way, in a process that would take humans a long time. And it would be a very, let's say, monotonous task. So here's a great use of using technology to do a task over and over again to make sure that we get our outcome, the result we want. So the person here that put this together of H2L Robotics makes this robot. And he says, quote unquote, "Artificial intelligence helps them identify sick flowers and very precise GPS coordinates, allowing them to pinpoint the flowers that need to be destroyed." Quote unquote, "The heart of the machine is the knowledge that we put into the AI model. The knowledge comes from tulip farmers, so we use the knowledge of the tulip farmers and we combine it into an AI model," close quote. So, pretty cool, right? Theo Vandervoort, who gave his name to the robot at Wham Penning's farm, and who retired at 52 years hunting for six flowers, is impressed. He quotes, "It's fantastic. It sees just as much as I see." But we all know that doing a task like this for hours and hours on end would be a big problem. So the fact that we have a machine that's able to do it and not get tired and log the data, I mean, I think this is really, really cool what you're doing. Washington State is going to start using drones to restore areas affected by graffiti. So what's this all about? Yes, so Washington State will now use drones to restore graffiti. But how is this actually going to work? Well, that's a great question. So they are soon contemplating employing aerial drone technology to deal with the growing graffiti problem on highway infrastructures. And lawmakers are hoping this session passes a bill to set aside $1 million for a Department of Transportation pilot program focused on finding new ways to erase spray paint from road signs, walls, and bridges. This is amazing. The question is it going to work? And drone technology is already being used in Washington State to help fight wildfires and aid police, but now it's going to do even more than that. It's just really amazing. In one issue, it had spent $1.4 million over a two-year span on graffiti removal and expected to spend more in the future. It cited one specific example of graffiti removal on overhead highway signs that cost the state between $40,000 and $50,000. The bill asks to focus on graffiti around Interstate 5 from Tacoma to Seattle and in North Spokane Corridor. The bill also includes use of cameras to deter and identify perpetrators. The explosion of graffiti, quote unquote, in our state has become a serious concern that demands an immediate and comprehensive response. We cannot continue allowing actions of a few to shape the narrative of our communities. Quote unquote, spray drones are more commonly used in agriculture settings to spray pesticides. Some have used drones to actually make graffiti rather than eliminate it. So I think there's an issue that drones could also cause graffiti. Of course, they could track it down to who's the controller and all this stuff, but there are some pros and cons with all this, right? And here's another interesting one, ladies and gentlemen. Brink has launched a unified live ops software for public safety drones. So tell me a little about this, John. What is this new live ops software for drones? So their whole idea is to create this public safety hub for managing drones, fleets, live streaming, real-time maps, communication, and of course, evidence storage. So this could be very helpful when it comes time for things like crimes and other types of situations. But the thing about it is that they're not only providing the solution like the software, they're providing the hardware, including the upgrades as well. And they're hoping to train a lot of local law enforcement on the technology and to give them something so that they'll be able to spend more time on other tasks and less time trying to track down how people are operating in the city by using drones and being able to manage them from just being at their desk. So we all know what happened with McDonald's, don't we? Well, what did Greg's IT do that caused McDonald's to go down? I think this is the multi-billion dollar question. What did Greg's IT do to crash McDonald's? That's really the question I want to ask. And I think a lot of people out there are surprised that I figured this out. Because, see, the thing is, you can't hide for long. And the fact that, McDonald's went down, and now that we know that it was Greg's IT, yes, Greg's IT messed up. They messed up with McDonald's. And I just feel that it's a lot more than we believe. The Pay It Watchdog examining the tech outages that caused chaos over numerous high-profile retail outlets Greg's became the fourth major firm to suffer IT issues, following problems at McDonald's, Tesco, and Sainsbury's. So the thing is, they're claiming that they were suffering the issues and they just passed them on to their clients. So my problem with this is, okay, so you're supposed to be in the IT industry. You have to remember that you got to protect yourself and you also got to isolate things. So their data is not with your data. You got to make sure everything is done right. And I'll tell you something. I'm not very pleased with this company, Greg's IT company. I think the biggest issue with them is they disimpressed me. Let me just say that. Because just because you have an account like McDonald's or you have a huge company, I still think you got to be accountable. Okay. And whether it's McDonald's or any other company, it's a problem. So they have more than 32,000 colleagues that work at Greg's. In case you're wondering, Greg's is actually a UK company. Yes, they are a UK company. And I'll tell you something. It says they've been around for 85 years, building a reputation for offering great quality, freshly prepared food at low prices with great services. But I have a problem with how this works. And I just feel that, they didn't do their homework properly. And I always said this before. It's not a question of if you're going to get attacked, but when, if you're not properly protected. So I have to say shame on you, Greg's. And I think McDonald's, I think you should definitely make them accountable, because if this happens again, are people really going to give you the opportunity to come back again? I'm probably going to say no. And I am not impressed with what I see at the Greg's company and how they handle this. Really, really bad, ladies and gentlemen. Really, really bad. I mean, it took them a long time to get them back up and running. So, we'll have to see, what's going on. But I have to tell you that what Greg's did was not acceptable. Yeah. It's Greg's IT in the UK. And, they were known for sandwiches, pastries. But they're also in IT. Okay. And so you're probably saying, so it's Greg's IT company in the UK. And so, they basically they try to provide fast growing service to everyone. They are a bakery chain, but Greg's, I just want to let you know, Greg's is an IT company. Okay, they are an IT company. And I think what's interesting about them is they believe that, they can do this, okay? And I think they believed that this was going to be like the be-all, end-all. But being in the UK and knowing what they did and all their stuff, I'm not impressed. I think they definitely needed to do some more work, but the question is why? This is my big question. Why did Greg's IT get hacked and take McDonald's down? Now they're going to tell you that it wasn't hacked. They're going to tell you that it was a configuration issue. This is what they're all going to tell you. They're going to say it was a configuration. I don't believe them. I really don't believe them. If you're that bad at IT that you make one change that you bring down the entire enterprise, you should be in business. And I just feel that this company, what they did, it's a big problem. They blamed a third-party service provider, configuration changes, said it's not a cyber attack, but what's really the truth? I want to know why, ladies and gentlemen, I want to know why Daniels went down. This is what I want to know. I want to know the truth. Why? Why did McDonald's, truthfully, go down? Why? They claim it was a global IT failure. Okay? That's what they claim. They were hit by a system failure that closed the restaurant, disrupted online app orders around the world, including the United States, Australia, Japan, Hong Kong, and the United Kingdom. And all they claimed was that it was a configuration issue. And that configuration issue took them all down. I think what it really was to send a message to McDonald's saying, hey, you need us more than you think. And if we ask for more money, you know you're going to pay it. I just don't believe the way this happened. I just don't believe it. It just was too widespread around the whole world. And I don't think we're going to get the truth about it. This global IT failure is a great way to get, oh, it was an IT failure. But I don't think it's enough. I personally think, this is my opinion, I think McDonald's is lying to us about the global IT failure. I do. And although they apologize for being down, I don't know. They said it was caused by a third-party technology provider and was not a cybersecurity issue. But it was down from 12 a.m. and not back up till 12 hours later, 12 p.m., lunchtime. And they say reliability and stability of our technology are our priority. And I know how frustrating it could be when there are outages, close quote. I think they're very good at propaganda. I think they're very good at making us believe something. I personally don't go to McDonald's. I haven't done fast food in years. And I think I go there once a year for the free French fries or whatever. But I wanted to give you guys the truth because I don't think McDonald's went down for the reason. I think somebody purposely made McDonald's go down. And I think it was in that Greg's IT company. I think it was somebody in there that intentionally wanted McDonald's to fail. I'm sorry. I don't have a lot of faith in this company. I mean, they didn't just take down one store, two stores. They took down an entire enterprise. And they took 12 hours to get it resolved. Configuration changes don't take 12 hours. If they're that incompetent, guys, they shouldn't be supporting a national publicly traded fast food company. That's my opinion. All right, guys, this has been an amazing, amazing, amazing week. I do want to leave you off with one more thing is what is in the latest iOS 17.x? So real quickly, there was a new update, iOS 17. It was actually 17.4.1. And there were two security exploits that could lead to arbitrary code execution from processing an image. The exploits were found in the Core Media and the WebRTC. The same exploits were fixed with macOS, Sonoma 14.4.1. And Apple had thanked Nick Galloway of Google Project Zero for finding and reporting the breach. So hopefully we won't see a lot more fixes. But I think the biggest thing is the fact that there's been a lot of them. And while the security flaws fixed in iOS 17.4.1 aren't as major as many emergency patches issued by Apple in recent months, It's still worth noting that you should update. And I always update about a day or two after it comes out to make sure they don't try to yank or there's any problems. And the update also appears, ladies and gentlemen, to fix the battery drain bug many were suffering from an iOS 17.4, as well as a QR code scanning iPad bug. So I definitely think you should update. If you have not, you can simply go to settings on your phone, go to software or about, and choose that, and you can update it. Make sure you do have it charged. You can also schedule it to happen at night. Do it from your Wi-Fi, though. That'll be the fastest way to do it. And make sure you have plenty of power on your phone. If you're not sure, do make sure it's charged. I think Apple's going to require it to be above a certain percentage anyway. It won't even let you try to install it. But you should have it plugged in. That'll make it go faster, too. Let me know, guys, if you want to hear something in the technology realm. If you're looking to be a guest, please do reach out. Very grateful for all of you guys. I do want to take this opportunity to wish you and your family a very happy, healthy, safe, wonderful, and a very blessed Easter this weekend. If you are celebrating with myself and others, that is March 31st. And that's going to be the last Sunday, ladies and gentlemen, of March. That means that next time you see me for the Jay Moore Tech Talk show will be April 5th, the very first show of April. Have yourself a great rest of your night. Again, a happy Easter, and I'll catch you guys real soon. All right, everyone, take care. And remember, let's use technology smart and use it as the tool to do the greater good for all concerned. And I'll catch you guys real soon. All right, everyone, be well.